The owners here.
But tonight I'm extraordinarily happy to have here John Stevens, professor of Buddhist studies, Aikido instructor, eminent author, and translator. I have been reading Mr. Stevens' books for decades, and they've been very helpful.
I've been around for a long time. Thank you.
They've been extraordinarily helpful to me personally, and I was just thrilled when the publisher called us and said, "Oh, would you mind? Would you think of hosting John Stevens?" I said, "Yes." So I want to thank Stonebridge Press for thinking of us. And the book that Mr. Stevens will be discussing, this is your latest book, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is The Tantra of the Tachikawa Ryu, Secret Sex Teachings of the Buddha.
The end of my reputation.
Thank you so much for coming to the I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you all for coming. The genesis of the book a few years ago, not to be melodramatic, but I was quite ill. And I was in the hospital for a long time. And I thought, I'm not going to recover. And what's going to be my swan song? And the Tachikawa Ryu was the tantra in Japan, and I always wanted to do a study, the Japanese version of tantra, and I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to do an academic study or a straightforward presentation, and I'm running out of time, and I'm in the hospital, and this is what I was thinking about. all of the tantric view of life, one of the particularly obnoxious things about academia is that you go to a conference and they'll say, well, tantra started in the 7th century, started in Bengal, it was at a certain historical movement. But in fact, tantra has always been around. Tantra means warp. The way things... I'm sorry.
A little louder.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Tantra means the way things are tied together and the way things unfold. The real meaning, the essential meaning of tantra is to bring out the best in a human being. Because there's nothing to do with... a particular historical place that started and ended. It's always been part of the human experience. It's been secret in the sense of imparted person to person, heart to heart. The Japanese word for transmission is ku, kuchi, mouth, den, so that you heard it from someone else. And nowadays we have all kinds of books that tell you how you can do this, or you can see it on YouTube, or on DVD, but that is not the way it's transmitted. There is no exception for learning it. Learning it just means I heard this. Most of the Buddhist sutras begin, thus I have heard. I've heard him say this. And then in our teachers, I've heard this person tell me this. I always thought in the Buddhist scheme of things that it was unfair that Buddha had the most extravagant sex life possible in the palace, and then that wasn't fulfilling enough. It was somehow limited, and then the opposite extreme is denying yourself every pleasure, physical and mental, and almost dying from that. And then came back the middle way. But from his experience, he told me the certain monks, well, the best thing is to put it away, right? Not use it. But I felt that was terribly unfair because he had that experience and he was telling you not to do it. So the tantric part was, well, you cannot understand those things if you have not had the experience of the sexual dimension of life. And it is true that in the tantra, or the and tantra is not just about sex, it's about the way of looking at the world and using it, transforming your desires and your imperfections into something deeper, purer, clearer. And in fact, every spiritual discipline is based on that, right? Bringing out the best in you, and also bringing out the best in others. That's the Buddhist part. It's easy to work on yourself, yeah? The real problem is when you're working with other people. That's part of Aikido. If you're training on your own, it's you and the universe. You know, that's tough. At least it's something abstract. And if you're training with another human being, that's much, much, much harder. Again, you actually needed a physical partner to work with, to interact, and learn the technology of the mental and the physical. So Tachikaru, sorry, is the Japanese version. I always thought that Japan is the sexiest country ever. If you wander in the countryside, there's all these wonderful phallic shrines. They've got hundreds. And this is the middle of nowhere. And they've got, I didn't have one in the book, unfortunately, but they're out there. And every single Japanese household had a Buddhist altar, a Shinto shrine, and a Dosoji, which is a gigantic linga, a phallus. The understanding, of course, that without the sexual dimension, there is no life. And the thing about the Tachikaru was that, well, this is it cannot be avoided. It should be. This is the altar. And there's nothing subtle about this, okay? the Holy of Holies. I don't know, can you see the image? But this was in a Japanese temple. And, you know, the Tibetan was a little more subtle. You know, the Yagyam. The touch color is more in your face. But it was suppressed. The science of sex and Tachikawa was that every single aspect of the human being, you know, oral, auditory, olfactory, anyways, the five senses. And there are very detailed texts about a mantra. It was a sacred each for each part you touched, and how you related to your partner. And I think that is the real meaning of the middle way. You know, the Buddhist middle way is that equality. And the one thing that if you sacred art, East or West, if you look at the Adam and Eve image, Adam and Eve are almost the same size. Two partners. And, you know, in fact, that's not true, right? The male is usually bigger than the female. So it was understood that the intimacy, the equality of the male and female is what the main purpose of Buddhist training. So you can have visions, transforming experiences, but you still have to learn how to relate to another human being on an equal level. This isn't the instruction manual, but it's got it doesn't have detailed descriptions because that's person to person, right? It's hard to harness to be imparted from one person to the other. This is sort of it's tantalizing. It gives the outline of a tantric monk who traveled all over the country, and his partner, a lady Hotoke, who did Zen training. And the esoteric would be the tantric part, the exoteric would be the Zen part, but in fact they're the same. Whatever the various experiences that he and she went through, I described. It's not a historical novel, because if you think about historical fiction, it's mostly a bunch of baloney. I'm sorry, right? I mean, they make up the story. So I thought, you know, symbolic narrative. The what happened between the two people was in Japan, but the universal application of what they experienced, what we experienced. It ends very quickly, so I thought I was running out of time. So I said, I got to finish. And I had the book designed so it would be published after if anything happened. But because I wrote this, I got better. It was the power, sorry, what I was visualizing, you know, during the process, also writing should bring out the best in you. Why would you write otherwise? You know, so what you learn from the book, what other people get, and so I've written all of these books over the years, and all of it was, or most of it was from an Aikido teacher in Japan, in Shirata Sensei, and one of the great teachers ever in Aikido, and he lived in Yamagata, northern Japan, and I would go there sometimes. And there was nobody there by himself. But he was there all the time. And I thought, that what a wonderful inspiration for me. So everything that I've done since then has been to pay back the debt. You know? I owe him a lot. You know, that's the best way you can do it. Is the best thing you can repay a teacher is to do the best you can. So he didn't write anything, or didn't had very few students. But from that, seeing him, and one time I used to go see him periodically for various, you know, discuss things and books and that. And I came down the stairs to his house. You know, the Japanese style, they have the ingawa there. They have the corridor where you can see where they sit in summertime. It's cool. And I walked down there and walked down the stairs, and I saw him sitting, you know, Japanese style seiza, studying, taking notes. He was 75 years old, one of the top teachers ever. He was changing. One of the few people that every day was a good day, kind of thing. The old days were good, the new days will be good. So seeing that, made me want to produce all of these things in memory or in honor of that example. So I I got the bug, and I've been manic for 30 years. There's 40 books or 50 books, I don't know how many there are. But it was all because of that particular inspiration. Studying, you know, you study all your life, you get better and better, and he changed, you know, from 75 to 80. And there was none of this realized master kind of crap. I mean, you get 3 more years. I'm still not there. You know, I was essentially the founder of Aikido. I got three more years. It's not done yet. The the practice is the realization never stops, gets better and better, deeper and deeper. One more thing, Aiki, the word Aiki from Aikido, in Chinese it's Gochi, which meant the ultimate sexual experience. So that is in Aikido, especially. The harmony between male and female, true intimacy with the right person, at the right time, in the right place, is divine. And that's what the Tachiko Ryu understood and taught and practiced. One question I had was, you know, male and female, the interaction, but the question, what about gay people? You know, you can't exclude them, and the interaction is there. And so that's one thing I should have put in here, you know, a gay couple is part of the, it covers everything. You know, one meaning of Zen is, you know, Zen is meditation, the other part of Zen is everything. We can take this, no matter what it is Zen. So we can use it positively. Same thing like Aikido, you know, is a big boat. So you don't exclude whatever challenge is made or whatever obstacles appear. You have to deal with it and deal with it right here, right now, as you are. So every day, this is Aikido, but it's also the Tachiko Tantra. Aikido is Tantra. You know, it's transforming your passions, your anger, hatred into something higher. The tantric part. But then I guess there's the poetry part. You know, I've written a lot of books about poetry translations. And that's tantra too. You know, the way you use words, how you react. And everyone's different. Even though I wrote the translation, what people see in the translations much different than I ever expected. And another thing I do is the art now, you know, curating, and for museums and art exhibitions. We always have pieces that have been in my trust for a while. And then, even in my office in Japan, I always had 10 or 12 Zen paintings or tantric paintings in my room. And they would, I would look at them, and they would be, something of me went into the paintings. And often, sometimes I'd be really tired, and I couldn't get really sleepy. And then I'd look at one of the paintings on the wall, would jump. Okay, I can do this. Back to work. And then when you have art, fine art, and people discuss it, and they always see, everyone sees something much differently than the other person, and also much differently than I thought. If I did the art myself, and there's things in there you don't see, other people can see. So the initiation, the beginning is usually with books, right? You read books, and then you do translation of sutras. But sooner or later, if you really study, art becomes the most important thing. Looking at, you know, statues, there's a reason there are statues and paintings. And that's something that you can encounter face to face. So the history of Buddhism that's in art, sorry, and the history of Buddhism that's in books are completely different. And art is where it's at, believe me. If you go to the museum or, and I've always, next time you go to the museum, look at the Buddhist, the sculpture, for example, and they have the sexiest women and the most handsome men. And this is Buddha doing his enlightenment. And they have all of these wonderful, erotic, vital images around it. So that was where that energy, that power, that beauty, that's Tantra. Any questions or talks, comments?
How was the transmission done then? I mean, so imagine you're a tantric initiate.
In Japan?
Yeah, in Japan.
Yeah. So
would it be from an initiated woman to an uninitiated man, or would it be?
In this case, it's a woman to a man. Mm-hmm. But it could work both ways. Women are probably better, I think, better preceptors, you know, teachers. But so it goes, you have all of these, it's 1,000 days. In Japan, the traditional training was whatever was 1,000 days, either 1,000 days straight or 10 periods of 100 days. So like the marathon monks, they train for 1,000 days is kind of hard, right? I mean, there's no breaks at all, 1,000 straight days. So you would train, in this case it was 1,000 days, and you take a suicide vow if you don't finish. I mean, it's serious stuff. You know, you can't go to a seminar and learn in a weekend. You know, it's your whole life. That was one thing, is you make a suicide vow, you finish it. Otherwise, people give up, right? It says, well, I'm not, this is what I'm going to do. And, but sometimes it can be, separate from the tantric part, you might make, when I was in Japan, there were people who just, they vowed to come to the temple every morning at 5 o'clock and ring the bell. That was their practice. You ring the bell, you know those big bells they have? They ring the bell for their... one guy was his all of the colleagues that he had lost during the war, or all the people killed in the war. So he came at 5 o'clock in the morning and did that. But 1,000 days, he wouldn't rest. And the tantric training would be, in this case, the seclusion, and then there's you know, sexual technique, mantra training. It was very rare, though, the number of people who actually did it, either way. But generally, it was from the female line. The transmission, but I'm sorry, I can't tell you where to go. everybody asks me, well, sign me up.
now that I've heard about the suicide pack, I'm not. Sorry.
No, that's that. Okay, that's the end of it. But once you know, nobody has a you know, pottery or whatever it was. Well, 12 year was the minimum. You know, to study pottery or any kind of craft in Japan. That was the minute. 12 years would be the 12 years as a disciple. But I mean, who's got in our these days? Who's got 12 years? You know, you should have, but you don't. And then it got shortened to 3 years, and now it's 1 year. You're on the accelerated course. But 12 years was considered for any transmission the time you would spend, you know, doing that. So that would be the. The initiation, and then you're expected to pass it on. But if you just pass it on to one person, that's enough, you know, to keep it going. But the sad thing is when you don't have anybody to pass it on, and then, but you can't do it half-assed. You know, either you do it the whole ball of wax with a suicide vow, or it's gone, and I think it's right. You know, you can't do it piecemeal, or the transmission is, you know, it's the way a person lives, the way you look at things. But in this case, after you finish the tantric training, well, you have to find a real partner. You know, you can have the teacher, he imparts all the sexual secrets, a Buddha, to you. But for it to really work, you have to have somebody you love. So it's not mechanical. And that's the missing element in here, that without somebody you really love, it's worthless. You know, just learning a technique, it's making it manifest, right, actualizing it. And all of us know that the hardest thing to do is to relate to another person, right, intimately. Right? Am I wrong? And that's where people live, and one thing is the idea of the training. You know, it's long term, that you really have to struggle with this, and it's the focus part, you know, on that, and then the 12 years or whatever it is, and then real application. So, you know, when I was in Japan at the beginning, that's what people did, was train. You know, train. Oh, so that's what a human being did, was do something. You know, do some kind of practice. meditation, temple, judo, aikido, whatever it was. So it was very supportive, you know. And so I did 1,000 days, but on a lower level. But going to temple 1,000 days, and I had to, you know, do meditation, kind of like that. But the hard part was going for 1,000 days, right? The training wasn't hard, but never taking a day off. And from that, you get that you can do anything, you know, that you can do this. But that's also, it's a luxury, right? It's a luxury to have that time. Mm-hmm. And it was uncomplicated, no support. Yeah, I'm sorry.
What was the training you did for 1,000 days?
Well, it was just get up at 5, and then go to the temple, sit for an hour, copy sutras, you know, copy the sutra, and then it's kind of like a Rocky movie. I used to run up and down the temple stairs, you know, do that and carry boulders, and then, you know, had a Taniguchi. You pick up the bamboo. It's fallen, and then you tie it in a little bundle and you hit it 1,000 times with a sword. And it was interesting because after, you know, it's a thick bundle, right? And you hit it, and when I got better, at first it was terrible. I was going like this, like a wood, you know, wood chopper. After a while, almost exactly to the day, 30 days, it would fall down. It means I was hitting correctly, you know? All of the stick would break at one time. So that was like 4 hours, you know. But I had a job. I had a family too. But I didn't take this. I didn't take the suicide vow, because I would have stopped. Because I had, you know. But it worked out. I did finish the time. But it's small time stuff. You know, 4 hours. Anybody can do that. But they thought I was I was in Japan, right? And a pretty big guy. And they were, who's this crazy guy? You know, Tengu. You know the Japanese tengus? The guys with the long nose? They thought it was a tengu. But after a while, this is a crazy foreigner in the mountains there. And sometimes I do, you know, like, a lot of different practices. You know the Heart Sutra? 262 characters? And did 3 prostrations for each character. Mm. And you really learn how that you're venerating the what you write. But that's all, it's all for you, yeah? But that was the easy part, because again, it's a bit selfish, yeah, me doing this. I had the time. I was working on myself. But the real hard work, the most important part is after that. It finishes, you know. But the 1,000 day was good, you know, doing it every day. And then, my son is here. First time you heard this, yeah?
No, I've seen it. I saw the crazy guy. He woke us up chanting.
Sorry. So it was right, you know, when I wrote it, and this came out. I wouldn't say, yeah, kind of flowed out of me, you know. I mean, just was this was right, I thought at the time, and I think it's pretty interesting. And it's just the way I wrote it, didn't change it at all, you know. I didn't want to, but I got better, as Peter knows back there, my publisher. It was as is, because usually when, you know, when
you change the commas,
you change a comma
at least one or two,
okay, yeah. A few sentences though, but not much, you know. Yes.
Could you say something about how you researched this? I know you wrote it in the hospital. You were probably running out doing interviews and mm-hmm. things like that. But what were the sources?
I'll never tell. I'm sorry. No, it was. That's a very bad answer. I'm sorry. It's been ongoing, you know, collecting the sutras and the photographs and looking at the artwork. And there's Tachikawa temples, visiting them. And but the thing was how to present this, you know, not as a straight study, because that's boring. And I thought I had, you know, a short time to finish it. So what would be the most effective, interesting, easy to read. I mean, you can, it's a pretty much a sit down and read a book, huh? An hour or so, hour and a half. Thought provoking, I hope. it's not fair. The last time I don't mention where it came from, or so I've gotten grief about that. You know, why didn't you? There's no footnotes in it. There's no index, which is, it's a tantra, which means that it's it can't have any of those things in it. And you know that when you know, often when those translations are done, people use a lot of brackets and they use the original language. That's a cop out for me. You've got to be able to understand it, I think. Well, like Aikido books, you've really got to understand what's being said, and you're confident enough to put it in your own idiom. You know, otherwise, it's not the transmission. It has to be in your idiom, right? The way you understand things. And that's a transmission. So in Tibet, the translators were saints, because they had the tremendous power, and to make it alive. Yeah. Yes.
How did you, as a person, live this experience in your home with your partner and your children?
How did I?
Yeah. And how did that? Were they all understanding? And
it was hard. It was difficult, and that was the greatest challenge. And I didn't, some things I didn't do well, and it's the obstacles, and everyone has them, and sometimes you pass through them, around them, and sometimes you run head into them. So it's a, you know, the quest is a path. So the path is not, the thing is not giving up. Yeah. Fighting the good fight, which means go to the very end. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, I'm not going to say if you read the book you'll be better, because you won't. But it might help, you might not. You know, just that it's the inspiration. You know, when you read books or see people, the instruction. But I always saw the art. Recently, I've been mostly working with art. Is that the you know, if it's good art, it's your teachers and friends. I travel a lot, and when I came back to my university office, I was so glad to see the calligraphy and paintings, my friends, like coming home again. So for me, they were alive, and now they're going different places. But it's the elevation, you know, of the human spirit with us. This body, right? That's in this body, in this place, it's not going to change. And that's part of the type, you know, what you work with, what you have, who you are, who you're with. But there's a reason we're here, in this place, talking, right? It's not arbitrary. You know, all of us. And the Japanese word is inen, which is karmic affinity. So we've probably known each other someplace else. And I hope we'll meet again somewhere. I might be a woman. Okay, I hope so. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes.
Did O Sensei ever discuss tantra or address sexual matters?
Yeah. There's the one poem about the red and the white jewels. Do you know that one? The
Sensei for teaching.
Yeah. So red is the ovum, right? Female, and then the white jewel is the male. You know, sperm. And those come together to create a pure jewel. So if you don't, you have to have the fusion, you know, of the red and the white, and that brings the clear jewel, your soul, you know, or your spirit. So it's in there. Aikido is very erotic, as you probably know from Prague. You know, another very important fact is when you're training, like in a Zen, you know, Zen training, for example. You're much more intimate with the people you're training with, often, than with your own partner, you know? Because when you train together, there's that kind of energy and interaction. So that's a problem sometimes, right? Because one of the partners is training all the time and stuff like that, and then there's a different energy. But certainly in Aikido, it's there. It's a hard to talk about in public, but with O-sensei's, you know, relationship with yeah, no, with okay. That's really secret. No, anyway, it's there. It's there. But that's for my part, is editing out those things, you know, the sexual parts. And
your task was to do.
No, I did that, but I don't know if that is my. You know, that's, biographers are, most biographies you read, they tell you much more than you want to know about the person, right? I mean, it's like, mm-hmm. I don't need to know this about this guy. So those biographies are much shorter, because everyone wants to be remembered at their best, right? I mean, I do, you know. I mean, why do you go into this kind of stuff? And before this YouTube and all this stuff happened, I thought when you had conversations like this, it was private. Anything you say can end up on the internet, right? So you have to be on your good behavior, which is good.
On the internet.
Really?
Okay. Be careful.
Be careful. That's fine. That's fine. But some things just should not be on the internet, you know? And it's not secret at all, as I said. You know, it's just, it's here, in person to person. Yes?
Yeah, in Japan, the culture that created the phallus and the leg of the statue.
Yeah.
Was that part of Shinto, or did it predate the
Shinto? Shinto has always been there, isn't it? Shinto is, that's a Japanese.
So was the tantra from in the Zen tradition taken from the earlier Shinto?
Yeah, Shinto was always that, you know, without, the world was created through sex, in the Shinto mythology, Izanami and Izanagi. That's also in Aikido, the two forces. So there's a male and female, and then the male, this is the Shinto, you know, Kojiki, in the beginning, and the male says, you've got something, let's see, the woman says, you've got something I lack, or missing, you know, and then the male says, no, you've got something I don't have, but they have to go together, and then they were confused, so they saw two Mandarin ducks mating. And that's how they got together. But then the child that was born was like a leech, you know. It was not something he didn't want. So it was killed. And then later it said, well, because the woman spoke first. So I think that's a later addition. The woman spoke first, so that was not good. So the man had to speak first later. But anyway, the idea is that it's always male and female. It's very, very strong. The world is and sex is holy. Sex is divine. It's a tremendous. It's what makes things tick. And so it was really in your face, kind of stuff. And,
I mean, in the Shinto.
The Shinto and Buddhism, but Buddhism, when Buddhism came in to Japan, the celibacy never took. I mean, forget that. I mean, that just like in Southeast Asia. You know, the sex is completely taboo, right? You weren't supposed to do it at all. And it was supposed to be when Buddhism came to Japan, but forget that. You know, just that's not going to happen. So, you know, Shintoism, Taoism, folk religion, Zen, Tantra, they're all mixed up in the Tachikaru. They took kind of the best things and put them together. So, one thing in Japan, there's not a clear distinction, you know, between Shinto, Buddhism, anything. Like I told, every house had, you know, a Buddhist altar, Shinto shrine, and a linga in the altar, which is kind of nice. You know, hail, hail, the gang's all here. So that's where I come from, that, you know. There wasn't the strictest distinction between those different elements. But they all revolved around the central issue. Anything else? Criticisms? Comments? You're full of baloney? Okay. Yes?
What are you doing in your life now?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sitting here talking to you right now, and that's, I don't know, actually. I'm just doing what I used.
Plans for another book?
Yeah, maybe. Kind of. I'm doing a biography of the founder of Judo, you know, Kano Sensei. But that's a lot. That's a project from a long time. More art stuff. Rengetsu? Do we have Rengetsu there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rengetsu book about her art and my erotic art collection. And I guess I have a lot of of books. I'm running out of time, though, you know, so I'm kind of in a hurry here. Now, but then, you know, this stage of the game, you think, well, what's really important? You know, what you can and can't do. I mean, for all of us, right? You know, what do you want to leave behind? And I thought this was was good. But, but then, you know, sometimes I read the things I wrote 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, and sometimes, God, this is terrible. But sometimes, it's okay, you know? It's not bad. That's the person who I was at the time. And I have some artwork that I did in my 30s. Most of the things are all gone that I've ever, you know, done. The calligraphy or painting, calligraphy mostly. And when I moved from Japan, I found a piece of Tantra calligraphy, and I found it. And it was so touching, so pure, simple, uncomplicated. It's been downhill since then, but I mean, was I like that, you know, at that time? It was good. Maybe, I don't know. But,
I have all the secrets. I'll
But then, in Zen calligraphy especially, you don't start really doing this until you're 60, you know, a full cycle, life experience. And then it's always, if people ask for something, and you do it, you know, that's how it started. Would you please give me something to meditate upon? You know, and so you give it to your students or your people, you know, parishioners or whatever it is. So now I'm feeling a little more confident after being through the wars, and then also the tantric part, it gets burned away, you know, the things get better, they're getting better, right? I feel that way, yeah, but the body's shot, right, physically shot, but understanding, hope, it's what's left behind, you know, what you want to leave. So I don't, a bunch of stuff coming, I hope. But one thing is when I moved to Hawaii, I swore I would never get on an airplane again. I would not go near an airport. And that lasted 6 months. And I think, but that kind of one thing is to retire, I mean, really stay in one place for a while, because traveling goes with the territory too, right? So you do the books and you move around, you have students and that kind of stuff. But returning to the source, you know, what's really important. But the book, for me, the books, you know, it's, for you, it's so important, writing it, you know, and then the reaction you have with people is also important, you know. Because I'm very happy when somebody says, I really like your books. Or, the best thing that's ever happened to me, or the best thing that does happen to me, is when people come and they have a whole bag of my books to sign. I'm so happy. That's ultimate compliment, you know. So then, because sometimes you get depressed too. Nobody reads these books. All my books are going out of print, you know, because of the publishing industry these days. And because you spend a year writing a book, right? And nobody reads it. Yeah, let's change the subject. Let's change the subject. I'm sorry. Yeah. Anything else? Yes.
I was very intrigued by your comment about the connection between Tantra and poetry,
mm-hmm.
and I read your translations of Rengetsu.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you could elaborate on that, you know, maybe using Rengetsu as an example of what you're referring to.
Yeah, but she was Rengetsu, she lost her family, two husbands and all her kids, five kids or six kids, by the age of 33. And she became a nun, taking the name of Rengetsu, Lotus Moon. And she supported herself by making pottery. And also she would have the pots, and she would inscribe them with her poems. And so she became very well known as a potter, poet, a very important figure in the culture of Kyoto. But she started up Pure Land, you know, Nama Amida Butsu, Pure Land Buddhism. Then when she was in her 70s, she studied Zen, more meditation. And end of her life, she went to live in the Shingon Temple, you know, Tantra. So, you know, like the best teachers, they've had all kinds of different experiences and different, you know, different mindset. So Pure Land is, I want to be born, the simplest kind of Buddhism possible. And then the Zen is the internal. And the Shingon is the, you know, the luxury of the world. So I think that's in her especially in her pottery, in the end of her life, you can feel the thumbprints in the bowls, and the you'll hold one of those. Do we have one? We didn't bring one. I'm sorry, we didn't bring one today.
I've held them.
Oh yeah,
I have held some of it, yeah. And I know what you're referring
yeah.
to.
Yeah, but that tantra is meaning unity, you know, body, mind, and art. That's a tantric take on that. You know that, that little frail little body, and the but the power in those inscriptions and the poetry is just wonderful. So she's great. Rengetsu is great. I mean, is that's what I'm working on now a lot. Her to make her work known and actually showing the stuff that you can. We had the last week was at the Arts of Pacific show, and we had Rengetsu pieces there. You could actually hold them. You still use them. She died in 1871. Make tea with the bowls, you know, drink with sake from the cups. It tastes really good. but it's a, you know, it's a big boat. There are a lot of wonderful things in it, and but that's when my life has been, you know, doing all these things. Kind of crazily, you know, but you can't hold me. Can't hold me back. Like writer's block. Mm-hmm. I have the opposite. Stop this guy. but you know, it's a love. You know, the poetry too. You have to love the poetry. You know, and it's just the experience. So that's a good translator. You know, like Kawabata won the Nobel Prize, right? Because of the translator. You know? Besides the secretary. If he had a bad translator, he wouldn't have won. What's the other guy who won the Nobel Prize? Oe?
Oe won, yeah.
And who is his translator? Nathan? Chan Nathan?
No.
Somebody else? But that, you know, that's like Rengetsu, you wouldn't know unless the translations are good. A lot of people this time really love it, which also makes me, you know, appreciate it. So. Okay. Are we exhausted? You can ask anything. Okay.
A question.
Yes.
Do you have the meditation practice? Is there something specific you do?
I swim in the ocean every day. I can't sit in seiza anymore. I can't cross my legs. So my body's gone. But so now it's mostly just looking at the ocean. Simple is best. Mm-hmm. You go through, you know, with all these kind of different, you know, tantric waterfall training and tantric training, ajikan. That's all very nice. But then it should get, you know, simpler, pure. You know, the less things you need. Like tantra, you need a lot of things, right? A lot of ceremony and, you know, ritual instruments, things like that. But gradually, you don't need any of that, right? It's like that's what Buddhism is, right? When you get to the shore, you don't need a boat, right? When you get the message, you hang up the phone. So the whole idea is to get rid of all these things, but they're stepping stones, devices, tools, tricks. Whatever practice you're in, those are very good. That's what keeps the boat together, right? All those things. And then when you get to the other shore, well, you don't need any of that. But I don't want to say that in public because I'm usually because but that's bad because, well, I don't need this, but you need this. You do need this stuff, right? To go from one place to the other. That's all. No, just that, but that's important. I mean, if I didn't go to the ocean every day, you know, I'd walk around the park. But I can do that where I am. You know, if you're in New York right now, New York City, the blizzards and the you know, you can't do that. That's all. So nothing special right now. Yes.
You invited us to ask anything. I'm just curious if you'd be willing to share a little bit about your childhood, where you grew up, and your first encounter with Asia, if it was, if your growing up was around here in America.
You know what? I grew up in Chicago, and my father was Mayor Daley's stockbroker. And a lot of the mobsters, he was the mobsters, you know, Chicago's a lot of mobsters. He was their stockbroker. Hated Japan because of the war. But when I was a teenager, I always felt at home in the Asian Art Wing of the Museum of, what's the Field Museum, right?
Natural History.
Yeah. And how can I explain that, where everything is geared against ending up in Asia? So that's one of the karmic affinity thing. There's some kind of seed in there. Mm-hmm. And the way it unfolds, who knows what's going to happen. So I don't know. How could that possibly happen? I went to Japan for 6 months, stayed 35 years.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
A lot of people have that, right, experience? You go do something and then, you know, for a short while, you end up doing the entire life.
What was the occasion that brought you to Japan initially?
Just I wanted to go. And it was a church-related thing. And then I became a Buddhist. I went to the Buddhist seminary. And I was the worst Buddhist priest ever.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. No, all this happened. But the books I always loved. Ryokan, I think, that, you know, poetry was the first one. Ryokan and Santoka. So poetry was the entry, you know, to translating that and then doing some of the Buddhist scripture stuff. And then I did Aikido from the start. And, I was much better at Aikido than being a Buddhist priest. But, yeah, it's amazing how these things happen. But now, you know, now there is no East and West, right? In this area, every religion you can imagine, and even some you can't imagine, are here, right? In this place, around here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's astounding. But the danger there is, you know, the spiritual supermarket kind of thing, the dabbling, which I don't like the seminar kind of concept, you know. I hope none of you make a living doing seminars. I'm going to trash you, right? No, I mean, that's a 1,000-day thing, you know, in Japan. You really had to do something, you know, every day for 1,000 days if you wanted to really, really learn it. So I'm a little uncomfortable about that. You know, I don't mind the idea of workshops coming back every year, things like that, like your training, you know. Your teacher comes comes and then you know, but like, you know, the Omega, you know what's Omega? Mm-hmm. Well, I've done things there, and that was. I hope I better shut up. Okay, next question. Now that's kind of stuff shouldn't be recorded, you know, yeah. And also we shouldn't do it in public so much, because that's my opinion, you know, personal opinion about it. So, or my experience too. Maybe you've had a wonderful, you know, experience with that kind of place. So. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Buy the book.